The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine and BlackEnterprise.com. The first article is titled, Rent is Too High. A formerly homeless activist, Carol Fife, led a group of moms to fight Oakland's housing crisis. Now she's doing the same as a member of the Oakland City Council. Carol Fife had no plans of running for office. 4 years ago, she was strategizing with a handful of Black mothers in Oakland who found themselves confronted by armed deputies in riot gear. Fife had organized a small group. They called themselves Moms for Housing, and they had occupied a vacant house owned by corporate investor Wedgewood Properties to protest flipping practices and unaffordable housing. A judge ordered their eviction on January 10th, and officers from the Alameda County Sheriff's Office arrived the following week with AR-15s in tow and handguns drawn to carry out the eviction. It was stressful, Fife recalls. Every single day it was a challenge because we never knew when the sheriffs would be coming. The night before the eviction occurred, we were debating who would address the media and who would stay in the house. Fife and another Moms for Housing co-founder, Dominique Walker, spoke to the press on eviction day. They had to counter a narrative driven by Wedgewood, which characterize the mother's occupation as stealing. Wedgewood has done everything since this group broke into the company's property and took it over illegally, the company's spokesperson, Sam Singer, said after the eviction. That didn't make them happy. It wasn't just the opposition in the media, Fife says now. It was also people in Oakland who were like, you guys can't be stealing from the community in this way. But this home is not owned by the community. It's owned by a multi-million dollar corporation. Wedgewood had been called a displacement machine by one housing advocate. The company had filed hundreds of eviction cases in the Bay Area, according to reporting from news outlet The Intercept. Occupying the home wasn't merely about the mother's personal housing insecurity. It represented the larger problem of housing being treated like a financial tool and not as a fundamental right. The first page of the group's website notes that the women tried working through the system. We work multiple jobs, and we still can't afford a home for our children. This system doesn't work for people. It only works for banks and corporations. They came in like an army for mothers and babies, Walker told news media when the moms were evicted. This is just the beginning. It was indeed only the beginning. Both Fife and Walker subsequently ran and were elected to serve in local seats. Fife became a city council member, and Walker has since served on the Berkeley Rent Board. Both have used their time in office to advocate for affordable housing. Though I had never intended to run, Fife says, I asked all the moms who lived in West Oakland if they would run for office and if they would run on the issues of housing and homelessness as the primary platform. Fife stepped up when everyone else declined. She had been an organizer in Oakland well before forming Moms for Housing, and young people from the community urged her to seek the Oakland City Council seat. I was pushed by my youth, my babies. They were like, Mama Carol, go forward. We got you. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. She won her election in November 2020, defeating her closest opponent, a two-term incumbent, by nearly 20 percentage points. Councilmember Fife was once homeless herself, and the need for affordable housing was a primary feature of her campaign platform. I've always been housing insecure since I've been in Oakland, she says, even though she has served as a professional nonprofit director. The idea for Moms for Housing came first, Fife says, when four different women on our current and former staff confided to her that they too were experiencing housing insecurity. After the last woman who came to my office to rest on my futon said she attempted to commit suicide because she didn't have a place to stay, I brought everybody back together, she says, describing the origins of the group. And I said, listen, this is too much for my heart to bear. I don't have people. I ain't got no money, but I know how to organize. And I have networks that will support us. That's where it started. The mothers ultimately reached a deal with Wedgewood Properties, and the company sold the home to a nonprofit in May 2020, now known as Mom's House. The property is under the ownership of the Oakland Community Land Trust and serves as transitional housing for other moms and their children. Moms for Housing continues to organize mothers in Oakland with the ultimate goal of reclaiming housing for community from speculators and profiteers, according to the group's website. Fife reinforces that message as a member of Oakland City Council's District 3. Homelessness is ridiculously high in every urban center in the country right now, she asserts, and it's because we see housing as a commodity versus a necessity. And my vision is that we need to change that. On her campaign website, Councilmember Fife lists her policy priorities, which include a statement that housing should be a human right. What does that look like? It means that every single person who is a resident of this country would have a safe place to call home, she says. They wouldn't have to worry about eviction, foreclosure, or any of the circumstances associated with housing insecurity. We would make sure that buildings were kept up. We would make sure that whether or not you were an elder or a college student or a person with disabilities, you had a place to stay. If we just look outside, we can see the status quo is not working, Fife adds. In fact, it's eating us alive. It's a crisis. And if we don't get it under control, we will all be crushed under the weight of it. And I refuse to allow that to happen. But we must educate everyday people about their power to make change. And that's what I am attempting to do. The next article is titled, Big Bank Beyonce Donates $500,000 to Cosmetology Schools Nationwide. Beyonce donated $50,000 in scholarships to students at 10 cosmetology schools nationwide. The schools were selected as scholarship partners for her Sacred Times Bay Good Fund, which assists cosmetology students on their journeys. The institutions chosen were dedicated to providing the next generation of stylists with proper instruction and helping diverse communities. The money will be distributed in $10,000 scholarships for five students pursuing licensure as cosmetologists. Participating schools include Beaver Beauty Academy in Atlanta, Trends Beauty Academy in Chicago, and Universal College in Los Angeles. Representing Beyonce's hometown is the Franklin Institute in Houston. Currently enrolled or incoming students at any of these five schools are encouraged to apply, and applications will close on March 20th. The funding will also provide grants to salon owners as well. The opportunity is available to all licensed stylists, including barbers who own or rent a space to conduct business and demonstrate financial need. 25 grants of $10,000 each will be allocated throughout the year, starting April 20th. The fund collaborates with Beyoncé's latest venture, her hair care line, Sacred, which dropped to fans and hair enthusiasts on February 20th. The brand seeks to uplift all hair types and textures while providing optimal health for one's mane and giving back through the entertainer's philanthropic efforts. Bay Good has previously supported businesses and students by uplifting HBCU scholars and Black entrepreneurs through various initiatives. Beyoncé continues to uplift those with goals to achieve. The Humanitarian Efforts website has more information on the Sacred Fund. The next article is titled, Breaking Barriers in Business, How a Black Woman Raised $230 million and Built a Billion-Dollar Company by Defying Seven Common Myths. At the inception of Uncle Nearest Premium Whiskey in 2017, before it became the world's most awarded bourbon for 2019, 2020, 2021, and 2022, and 2023, and before Nearest Green Distillery grew to become the world's 7th most visited and fastest growing distillery, I faced the colossal task of raising capital to build what is now a more than $1 billion company. It shouldn't be surprising that Uncle Nearest was considered a very high stakes venture, and every venture capital, private equity company, celebrity, and well-known athlete I pitched initially passed on the opportunity. The story of Uncle Nearest is intimately entwined with that of Jack Daniel's, arguably the most ubiquitous American spirit brand in history. Despite this connection, Jack Daniel's and its $30 billion parent company have never held an ownership stake in Uncle Nearest. To potential investors, this lack of financial ties meant that we could be seen as competitors by this industry giant, even as a burgeoning startup, causing them to point their arsenal at stopping us. Additionally, the landscape of the spirits industry, particularly regarding Black entrepreneurship, has always been challenging. Before Uncle Nearest, there had never been a successful Black-founded spirit brand. Uncle Nearest stands out as the first and only Black-owned brand in the spirit sector that was founded and is led solely by a Black individual holding a majority controlling interest. The distinction underscores the groundbreaking, unprecedented nature of our journey and the barriers we have worked to overcome in an industry where such success stories have been non-existent. Raising capital is often the most daunting challenge for Black or women-owned startups, and my journey with Uncle Nearest was no exception. In the early days, my expertise in fundraising was limited and my professional network was small. I faced the additional hurdles of navigating trademark opposition and leading in an industry not typically accustomed to female leadership despite these challenges and without access to the influential rooms often considered crucial for success, my conviction in my leadership and our brand's potential never wavered. I remained steadfast, committed to overcoming every obstacle. Raising the $230 million needed to grow Uncle Nearest into a company valued at over $1 billion and to secure the more than $50 million required to build out the 423-acre Nearest Green Distillery and the more than $30 million to buy and renovate the historic Domaine Saint-Martin along the largest Grand Champagne vineyard in Cognac, France, the namesake of the small region where all of the world's cognac must be produced. For the development of a second company required dispelling 7 pervasive myths. The common belief that obtaining capital for startups like mine is an insurmountable hurdle was a reality I had to confront head on. My unwavering belief in my leadership, life partner, team, and vision behind our company was the driving force that propelled me through these challenges, transforming Uncle Nearest Inc. into the success story it is today. Thanks to the connections of my husband of 20 years, Keith Weaver, we successfully completed a seed series round of $3 million. His former boss's belief in our vision was instrumental in this success. While the seed series was beneficial, those funds could only take us so far. We knew that we would need to raise more capital within our first year. The experience and lessons learned from that round of fundraising were crucial in shaping all subsequent rounds. Every person involved in that round was connected to Keith's former boss. They believed in us because he was unwavering in his belief in us. I learned an important lesson that would repeatedly manifest throughout my fundraising journey. There are no lone investors. More than 95% of the investors in Uncle Nearest have been referred by another investor. Starting with just one investor in 2016, thanks to our CFO, our long-time business attorney, and the invaluable support of the lead investor in our Series A, we had over 170 by the end of 2022, each contributing to elevating this company to unparalleled heights. Early on, I named our investment group the Sixth Man, a name that persists to this day. Aware that our funds would be limited, I knew we could only hire a certain number of people to promote Uncle Nearest. However, by assembling an enthusiastic coalition of investors, they effectively became our sales team, our sixth man. This strategy is partly why Uncle Nearest is featured in an unprecedented number of national accounts, on some of the most prestigious golf courses, and in some of the most exclusive lounges and hard-to-reserve restaurants. Our sixth man made this possible. In 2022, I observed a concerning trend in the venture capital industry. The amount of capital being deployed to Black founders by venture capitalist firms dropped to just 1% down from 1.3% the previous year. By the third quarter of 2023, this figure had plummeted further to a mere 0.13% of the total capital, amounting to only about $39.7 million out of $29.9 billion, as reported by TechCrunch. So many Black entrepreneurs with brilliant ideas are sitting on the sidelines, as their assumption is that they can't raise the capital to bring their vision to life. I recognize that most founders don't give away their secret sauce, but I'm not most founders and have been acutely aware from very early on in this venture that my success came at a price. That price is pulling as I climb and sharing what I learn in real time so others can enter the doors I am opening today, not 20 years from now. To raise the capital needed to grow this business, I had to debunk these 7 myths. Myth 1, significant investments must come from venture capital or private equity firms. A widespread belief in business financing is that major investments predominantly come from venture capital, VC, or private equity, PE, firms. However, my journey with Uncle Nearest challenges this notion. In our founding year, which is a similar experience for most Black or women-founded businesses, every VC and PE firm we pitched to passed on the opportunity. Since then, I have consistently refrained from pitching to or accepting investments from VC and PE firms. However, one of the most substantial and supportive sources of investment for Uncle Nearest has been family offices. For example, a multi-billionaire's family office invested $15 million in Uncle Nearest. The investments from this family office are notable not only for their size, but also for their strategic approach. They aim to own 2% of a company and support the founder's vision without seeking a board seat. Several other family offices have invested more than $20 million and have been incredibly active in the secondary market, which we'll discuss later in this article. This experience, which is one of many in my company's history, demonstrates that while VC and PE are common sources of business funding, they are not the only options for securing substantial investments. Family offices can provide equally significant support, often more aligned with the founder's vision and values, making them a viable and sometimes preferable alternative. Myth number 2, you must have a strong network to raise capital. To connect with the ultra wealthy, a strong network is indeed essential, but the investor landscape is much more diverse. In the United States, nearly 23 million millionaires actively seek investment opportunities, and they can be found everywhere. During Uncle Nearest's early years, I embraced a grassroots approach to building and financing our brand. I attended major spirits events, ran our booth, mingled at festivals, and introduced people to Uncle Nearest, engaging in retail bottle signings and whiskey dinners. I made my presence widely felt. This hands-on approach involved inspiring and engaging potential investors, often leading to business card exchanges and investment offers. Back at the office, I vetted each prospect. If they had a history of accredited investments, discussions were initiated through our CFO. Our investor group, the Sixth Man, is incredibly diverse, ranging from accredited investors earning just over $200,000 annually to multi-billionaires. This diversity has been pivotal in Uncle Nearest's growth. Myth number three. Major investments come only from wealthy investors. A common misconception in fundraising is that substantial investments come exclusively from wealthy investors like Deca millionaires, Sentai millionaires, and billionaires. However, the landscape of investment opportunities is more diverse. To be classified as an accredited investor, one only needs an income greater than $200,000 for the past 2 years, while I set a minimum investment of $250,000 to join our cap table. It didn't need to come from a single accredited investor. Groups of accredited investors could pool their resources into a special purpose vehicle, SPV. My introduction to SPVs came when my business attorney connected me with an investment banker who organized the first SPV to invest in Uncle Nearest. The SEC permits SPVs incorporated in the United States and raising $10 million or less to include up to 250 accredited investors. In my company, well over 170 investors, most part of SPVs, family offices, or family trust, contribute to growing Uncle Nearest. Regardless of their group affiliation, I treat each individual as a sixth man, acknowledging their daily efforts through their influence and networks to help grow Uncle Nearest. This approach significantly broadens the potential investor base, challenging the myth that only individual high net worth investors can provide substantial capital. Understanding and leveraging these diverse investment channels were crucial in financing Uncle Nearest's growth. Myth number four, all investors demand board seats. I successfully raised over $70 million for Uncle Nearest, Inc. before appointing the first person to our board. This individual has been an enormous value add, providing to be an invaluable supporter throughout our journey. The spirits industry, lacking successful precedents set by people of color, required a different approach. I needed investors who understood this unique challenge and were willing to provide capital and support without demanding board seats. This approach allowed me to innovate and carve out a new path. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avril Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.